As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is it coming home? Welcome to the game, World Cup Daily from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer and thank you for joining us. A big thanks to our sports editor Alex K. Jelski for the musical intro today. We are less than 24 hours away from England versus Sweden in the last eight. In the studio with me, it's Alan Smith. And in Samara with the England squad, it is Henry Winter. Hello, Henry.
Hi, Natalie. Hi, Alan.
Later on, we're going to be joined by Oliver Kay, who witnessed France progress into the last four with victory over Uruguay in Nizhny Novgorod. And we'll be discussing Belgium beating the bookies' favourites Brazil to set up a semi-final date with the French. But first, Henry, England have only ever reached a World Cup semi-final once before on foreign soil, and they are 90 minutes, possibly more, away from doing so again. Just how excited are you, first and foremost?
I think the whole country is excited. I was talking to a couple of players over the last couple of days and saying, are you very aware, even though you're in this incredible bubble, are you aware of what's going on back home? And they said, well, yeah, because of social media and because of talking to family and friends, they've been absolutely catching up with the wild scenes all over the country. And it's not just in England, it's around the world. I mean, I got sent a photograph from a friend in a bar, Leeds United fan, a bar, absolutely packed bar in Boston, Massachusetts. Just Derby fans, Leeds fans, everyone. It's England United at the moment. So it's great. Everyone's putting their club affiliations to one side and just really backing the team because they're a young team. They've got so many sort of attractive qualities and there's a humility about them. And people can see that they're going places. So absolutely, there's an excitement towards England, and there's also a very quiet belief within England, within the squad.
What about you personally, though, Henry? How are you nervous? You know, especially pre-match. How are you going to be feeling, do you think?
Not really nervous. I'm too busy working. I think when you get to this stage, you just want to see English players just put on that shirt and just go out and do themselves justice. Their families are out here. They know what a key moment this is. They're probably going to do great things, and some have done great things with their clubs, but nothing compares to actually doing it for your country. You know, you see the teams out here. You see the teams who are distraught when they get home, the tears and then the reaction when they get home. International football is huge. I mean, it's come under attack in recent years with the Champions League being so good, the Premier League being so big, El Clasico and all that. There's so much focus on the money in club football. But actually, the emotion and the drama and still the quality in international football, as we've seen in this great tournament, has been fantastic. So, yes, I don't get nervous. I'm just a journalist reporting on the event. I'll go and talk to some fans beforehand and take my seat in the stands and just wish them well. And they're just a genuinely nice bunch of players. I had a chat with Jack Butland yesterday. He wasn't doing any sort of media interviews, but he was just sort of floating around the media centre. There's no real ego in the squad. There's no real star name. Everyone talks about Harry Kane, but anyone who knows Harry Kane knows he's as humble as they come. And I think that sort of sets the tone. I think for me, the person who embodies the squad best on and off the pitch is Kieran Trippier. He's one of the nicest guys you can meet. Around the hotel, everyone says it around the hotel, to staff, to FA people, he goes up to them and said, how are you doing? You're coping, you know, okay, away from home, missing your family, whatever. He's a very conscientious individual. And of course, I mean, he's been fantastic on the pitch as well. So, they're a very appealing bunch.
I want to ask you, Henry, how will the mindset of the team and the fans change shifting to a game against Sweden where England are the favourites?
They've got to say Sweden are the favourites, but England don't have a particularly good record against them. You know with Sweden that they will absolutely give everything. particularly against England, because they've grown up watching Tips Extra, the programme they have there, which just focuses on the Premier League. They probably know more about Premier League players than about English players. A lot of them want to come over and play in England. So they've just got this huge desire to get one over on the English. You could see with some of the leading questions that were put to Harry Kane and Gareth Southgate by some of the Swedish journalists today, and we're all good friends with the Swedish journalists. We play them so many times down the years, but we're just saying, oh, you're just trying to play into this perception of English entitlement, where there simply isn't the case with the English players at the moment. They're very humble. You know, the Swedes are going on, oh, you all play for big clubs. I mean, Harry Kane was out on loan. Kieran Trippier was rejected by Manchester City. He had to, he had his own journey to the top and a few delays and dead ends along the way. So there isn't that sort of any arrogance around this English team as the Swedes think. And I think one or two of them will be in for a little bit of a surprise tomorrow, because England certainly don't see themselves as the favourites. They see themselves as hungry underdogs.
The former Republic of Ireland striker Tony Cascarino has written for The Times and compared this Sweden side to the Irish side he played in under Jack Charlton. A tough but slow, in Tony's words. Alan, as an Irishman, do you see similarities?
I do. I think Tony's actually probably been a little bit harsh on that Irish team. Really? People kind of always assumed that this was just... that team were just purely kick and rush, quite physical. And opponents would obviously jump to that conclusion as well. But they were obviously far more talented. There were players belonging to most of the big Premier League clubs now, which, as an aside, you couldn't really say about the Irish team at the minute or even the past decade or so. In terms of the comparison to Sweden, to an extent, I think Tony's right. Sweden's biggest issue throughout the World Cup seems to be the lack of a finisher, which, you know, people can immediately jump to conclusions that, you know, they need someone like Zlatan, and these comparisons are... they've grown quite tired now, because it's quite obvious that as a team they're far more united than what they would have been while Ibrahimovic was playing, where it was very much all about him. But there were also occasions where, in particular, Marcus Berg, who's been playing up front, has kind of... he's had quite a lot of chances. It's more about the work he's been doing off the ball, not necessarily scoring goals, but there's a lot of hard work in terms of decoy runs and bringing other teammates into play, which I think has been quite strong. But just going back to Tony's point, they're a big team who are happy to get physical, obviously quite strong from set pieces, which Anderson, the manager, has said that the game against England will be the first time they feel like they're competing against a team who's similarly strong from set pieces. Obviously, England will have faced Colombia, who would have considered themselves to be particularly potent from free kicks and corners as well. They're a big team, not particularly quick, but they're so well structured, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was a 1-1 or even a scoreless draw.
Some say Sweden have an advantage due to their training base being in a hotter climate. We're expecting it to be, 29 degrees, they say, in Samara on Saturday. And Sweden also arrived in Samara a day earlier than England and trained in the stadium today. So have they got any advantage over England at the moment?
I think in the past, definitely, you might have said that, but this is a supremely fit England team. I don't think the heat will be so much of an issue. I mean, I arrived around about kickoff time, and I thought, well, this is nice. Then I got sent a picture of my lawn back home. I go, wow, it actually looks hotter in England. So I think it will be fine. I don't think it will be a huge issue. It's not like the first game where there were all those midges and moths all over the pitch. I think that was far more sort of distracting to the players. You did see it in the last game towards the end of extra time. Players like Kyle Walker, who's supremely fit, cramping up. You might see a little bit of that again. But then again, you know, they kept their composure and their footing in the shootout. So, look, I think it's going to be another 2-hour stint. I think it could be penalties again. Oh, but I think maybe psychologically England will be even stronger after what they went through last time.
Oh, Henry, I can't believe you've already uttered the word penalties. Let's talk about the man who's going to be in charge of the game on Saturday, Bjorn Kuipers. We know that the referee, Mark Geiger, enraged the Colombian players on Tuesday night. A lot of the referees have come under scrutiny. So, Alan, what sort of game can the referee Bjorn Kuipers expect?
Obviously, for European viewers, he's one of the most familiar refs. Obviously, he's quite a regular in the Champions League. probably most notable from the three games he's covered the World Cup was the Neymar incident, when Neymar dived in the box, went to VAR, they checked it, and he reportedly told Neymar to shut up while Neymar was sort of gesturing and screaming at him. Not really sure that Neymar paid much attention to that, because he seemed to continue on. He was also referee of the Russia-Spain game. Piqué's handball, wasn't afraid to give a penalty there. So I think if we're looking at sort of it being a set-piece battle between the two teams, he seems sort of well-versed in what to keep an eye out for. So we've seen continuously England players being grappled and dragged to the box, which is probably a symptom of these clever basketball set plays which Southgate has introduced into the team. From an England point of view, I feel like Kuipers being in charge could possibly be a slight benefit if he's keeping an eye on these sort of things.
And Henry, just finally, you've already spoken about England united when it comes to the fans, club loyalties put aside, but has pride, do you think, in the national team been restored regardless of what happens on Saturday?
Really good question. I think it has been restored, Natalie. I mean, you know, it seemed only a couple of months ago that we were in Malta, where the England fans were turning their back on the team. Okay, there's a lot of nice things to do in Malta of a night time. But, you know, they picked up their flags and they walked out. And that was pretty painful for the players. Rewind 2 years to Nice, when England fans were quite rightly chanting, "You're not fit to wear the shirt," and Harry Kane was on corners and everyone was bemused what was going on. And the disconnect between dressing room and terrace just seemed gargantuan, the distance. So Southgate has, by getting the players to show their human side, doing more interviews, being more active on social media, little things like people say, was it staged? What Harry Kane did with that five-year-old kid in the Birmingham hospital, Ben, who's got cancer, that is what these players are like. They are individuals like that. They are humans. You know, they've got kids of their own, and they, to a man, they feel empathy for that kid. We saw it with Jermaine Defoe and Bradley in recent times before he tragically passed away. There is that emotional connection and reconnection. I think that's one of the reasons you've seen all these wild party scenes around the country, because I think the public generally likes this group of players. They can see the humility, they can see the work, fighting their way through adversity, Danny Rose fighting his way through depression, Raheem Sterling, the difficult start he had in life. You know, they're not the only ones there. There are a lot of individuals there who've got stories to tell, who've come through difficult things. And there is a huge empathy for this team as individuals as well as football.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The Game, World Cup Daily from The Times with Natalie Sawyer.
You can hear live commentary of both of Saturday's quarterfinals on TalkSport. It starts with England taking on Sweden at 3 o'clock. Then the clash between Russia and Croatia is live at 7 on TalkSport. Belgium have beaten Brazil 2-1 in Kazan to reach the World Cup semi-finals for the first time since 1986. Two goals in the first half were enough for Belgium, with Brazil getting a goal late on as they tried to stage a comeback, but they ran out of time as Roberto Martinez's side set up a last four clash with France. And Henry, we expected an exciting game, but we probably didn't expect Belgium to outclass Brazil, certainly in that first 45 minutes, did we?
Well, I thought it was the absolute deserved winners. I thought they were outstanding from back to front. Courtois with that late save. Kompany with his leadership and organisation. Fellaini, much maligned. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of his. Didn't quite understand where he fits in at Manchester United, but I thought he was superb. And then Hazard, I just thought was just sensational. I mean, he was taking the ball. He was running at Brazilians and he was taking an absolute kicking, but kind of like the thing about play acting. You know, he wasn't staying down. He was looking sort of slightly ruefully at the ref saying, why am I getting kicked all the time? And yet he was just outstanding. And De Bruyne with that goal as well, the second Belgian goal, was fabulous. And Lukaku, when he's in this sort of form, particularly when he's running from slightly deeper and brushing defenders and midfielders aside, he's absolutely unplayable. So, I mean, that is going to be a formidable matchup between France and Belgium in the semis.
Alan, Romelu Lukaku appeared to be playing in a wider role, which we saw him do sometimes at Everton under Roberto Martinez. Brazil just couldn't live with Lukaku, it seemed.
No, and I think because he'd played centrally in all the previous games, Brazil seemed to be taken aback by that. Actually, I had a quick look at full-time at his touch map, and I think he touched the ball inside the box 3 times, but he was incredibly effective going there in the right and had a key role to play in De Bruyne's goal, which was sort of, it's quite nice because if you think back to the Japan goal when he obviously had that nice dummy in the run-up to that, and there are some similarities where he's sort of taken on the Dries Mertens role of providing the pass from the right for De Bruyne. And yeah, it was effective, and I think Roberto Martinez deserves a lot of credit for it because it was, nobody had really seen it coming, certainly not Brazil. It's just worked perfectly. He seemed to drop deep quite often as well, and he seemed happy to dig in and do his defensive duties, which probably with a centre-forward, you don't really associate centre-forwards were dropping deep to fill in these kind of roles, and he seemed happy to do that. And obviously the left side is where Neymar has attacked, and Marcelo before his injury seemed quite creative as well, and until late on Neymar was silenced, and I think Lukaku's effort probably indirectly fed into that as well.
Do you think Roberto Martinez can win the World Cup? Bear in mind he's won the FA Cup with Wigan. Can he now win the World Cup with Belgium?
I mean, it was a fantastic story for him because, you know, he was got slightly maligned. He got a bit of criticism at Everton. But I can remember when you often find you get invited in to see managers when they're at a difficult time and they want just to sort of, you know, a balanced platform like The Times, just to sort of allow them to sort of express what they're trying to do without getting controversial headlines or people looking necessarily for the sort of controversial stories. They just want a platform which they can present themselves. And I remember going to see him at Everton, and he just spoke so intelligently, and you could just see there's a purist in there. And it didn't really work out there in the end, but he was always relentlessly positive when he came into press conferences, even when they'd had a poor performance or a poor result. And he's just one of those people you instinctively warm to because he's very upbeat. His glass is always full. You see him around training grounds when he comes into the press room, often if he's doing work for sort of television. And he's just such an engaging character. So again, you wanted to see him do well. There was always this question mark, has he got the ability to lead top players? And I think he showed in this tournament, and particularly tonight, with the way he set them up with his backroom staff, drawing on the expertise and the leadership of very strong individuals like Kompany, like Eden Hazard, and De Bruyne, and Lukaku, one of the most intelligent people you can meet in football. He's drawing on that sort of almost battle-hardened committee and has just created this environment, this team, this tactics, this structure, this belief. And, you know, France are going to be in for a difficult game.
What did you make of Brazil's tournament?
Disappointing. I think expectations were obviously really high, and they showed some glimpses during the group stages, fleeting 20-minute spells where they looked really good, but then suddenly they would go to sleep. And if you cast your mind back to the opening game against Switzerland, they, for most of that first half, and especially then, they're left with this, these sort of triangles between Marcel and Neymar and Coutinho, who would veer left quite often. They looked amazing, but the second half of that game, they just faded. Costa Rica struggled until the very end. Serbia was possibly their best overall performance, where Neymar kind of looked like he'd been growing more comfortable, had sort of gained a little bit of fitness having come back from that long-term injury. But then again, today they just seemed to struggle. They had quite a lot of attempts. They had almost 30 attempts in tonight's game, but very few were on target. Courtois made that amazing save from Coutinho late on, but apart from that, he didn't really have that much to do.
Henry, I'm interested to know what you make of Neymar, the Brazilian talisman, of course. Will he be remembered more for his antics than his football in Russia?
It's an interesting one, because the Brazilians are obviously very sensitive about, they're so proud about Neymar. They're also sensitive about his image and whether neutrals like the English actually do see him as. I didn't think there was so much play acting from him tonight as we've seen in some of his previous games. But, you know, you do find yourself, I haven't watched Brazil live, just only on the television, but you do find yourself shouting at the screen, oh, just get up and get on with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a little bit embarrassing. There's been a great World Cup, but the housing of referees and the play acting, particularly by some of the Brazilians, as you know, and other teams, has been a little bit embarrassing, and FIFA have got to get a grip of it, because it's, you know, this is the opportunity to present the game to the world, and there are one or two people out there, amazingly, who are not football fans, and you know, you could win them over.
The Game, World Cup Daily from The Times with Natalie Sawyer.
We'll be giving you a Times trivia teaser question every day on every podcast, as provided by Times statistician Bill Edgar. Last time out, we asked you which former Arsenal player was sent off at the 2014 World Cup, following in the footsteps of his uncle, who had received a red card at both the 1994 and 1998 World Cups. The answer was Alex Song for Cameroon, and it was his uncle, Rigobert, who was sent off at two World Cups. Naughty, naughty. Today's teaser really knocked us for six from Bill. Who is the only member of England's 23-man squad at this World Cup who is known by his middle name rather than his first name? Interesting. Tune into our next podcast to find out the answer. France secured their semi-final in St. Petersburg against Belgium on Tuesday night after a 2-0 win over Uruguay. Raphael Varane heading in an Antoine Griezmann free kick 5 minutes before the break. And then Griezmann's strike from distance was fumbled into the net by the Uruguay goalkeeper Fernando Muslera on the hour mark. Oliver Kay watched the game in Nizhny Novgorod. And Ollie, France lost the final of Euro 2016, the tournament, of course, they hosted. Are we seeing a team on a mission to put that right?
It seems so. I mean, it didn't necessarily seem so in the first few games when they were quite slow out of the blocks. But I think we've seen it happen quite a few times with teams where they start the World Cup slowly and then getting out of the group is all about survival, and then they slowly find a rhythm in the knockout stage. And that seems to be the way that with France. I mean, I think they've got another gear to reach, but I felt that they've been so much more impressive in these last two games in different ways. Very spectacular with the pace of Mbappe and Pogba, so impressive, and Griezmann so impressive against Argentina last week. And then a much more sort of controlled, mature, disciplined performance today against Uruguay. So yeah, they do look like a team who are running into a bit of form, and they will fancy the chances of going further.
Well, it is now Belgium in the semi-finals, Ollie. And looking at the two squads, would you say that maybe they are the most talented squads in this tournament?
Yeah, I'd say there's probably a good argument for that, certainly in terms of creative and attacking quality. And the amount of talent on both sides, I mean, to reel off, you know, De Bruyne, Hazard, Lukaku, Mertens for Belgium, Pogba, Mbappe, Griezmann, Giroud, Dembele. These squads are very deep and very rich in attacking and creative quality. Belgium have got very, very good, very, very experienced central defenders. And I think people probably wonder, is there a gap in that system? Well, it didn't appear so tonight with that wonderful performance against Brazil, and Roberto Martinez has done really well with them. As for France, very, very structured, very organised, sort of 4-2-3-1. Kante doing a very good job in front of the defence. Amfiti and Varane, very good, much younger central defenders, but very composed, very athletic. And I guess, yeah, from front to back, both of those teams look full of quality. And I would say Belgium are the ones who will probably risk more in pursuit of victory, and France were probably the ones who are determined one way or the other to find a way. And I think it's a really exciting prospect and a great clash of styles and a great clash between some excellent players on both sides.
We've got to speak about England and have your England hat on. You interviewed Gary Lineker, which you can read at thetimes.co.uk, discussing the feelings of waking up the morning of a World Cup semi-final, knowing that England expects. What did he have to say?
Oh, I had a great chat with Gary, and he was. A lot of it was about this summer and what Gareth Southgate's team are doing, and how impressed he is, and how utterly confident he's suddenly feeling. And he was also talking about 1986 and 1990 at those World Cups, and those huge games that most of us of a certain age will remember, against Paraguay and Argentina in '86, and then against Belgium, Cameroon, and West Germany in the knockout stages in 1990. And he said, he was talking about how he never used to feel nervous before games, never. But on the morning of that famous World Cup semi-final against West Germany in Turin in 1990, he said he could barely get out of bed because he just felt exhausted from the game against Cameroon three nights earlier than that, which had gone to extra time, as of the one before that. And the exhaustion you feel, the physical fatigue, is far greater than any kind of sense of emotional pressure. I guess he would be probably an extremely composed player, and many others wouldn't feel that way. But he feels that Harry Kane, for example, has a similar mindset, that all of these players will just be feeling excited about the prospect of this quarterfinal against Sweden, and who knows what beyond, potentially. I think his words probably made me quite excited as well, because he was just saying, I look at this team and I look at this match and I do fancy them. He said, we have got better players than Sweden. He respects Sweden, and they're a very professional, serious, hard-working, organised team. Not going to be easy, but I would challenge anybody to read the interview with Gary Lineker and not feel a bit more positive at the end of it.
Well, that's what we want to hear, Ollie. But how are you going to be feeling come kickoff? Are you going to have any pre-match nerves?
On Tuesday night in Moscow, I felt really excited and was looking forward to the game. I think it was only towards the end, and that sort of crushing blow of the equaliser, then it just became unbearably tense. And as I said, on Tuesday night, it was the additional tension of having to work as a journalist, the newspaper deadlines, which are right on the final whistle, right on the sort of final penalty. But it was very tense just watching it from every point of view. We have to probably brace ourselves for another one of those and strap in and enjoy the ride.
Indeed. So the key thing is, if you want to feel optimistic, head to thetimes.co.uk to read that interview with Gary Lineker. Should England, or when England, maybe I should say that, get past Sweden, they won't have long to find out who they'll play in the semi-finals, as Croatia against Russia kicks off just a few hours after the final whistle in Samara. Russia made it to the quarterfinals after winning their last 16 encounter with Spain through a penalty shootout. And Alan, for a team that was predicted to fail by much of the Russian media before the tournament began, they do seem to be coping with the pressure of being hosts, but do they have enough in their team to go further and cause another upset and reach the semi-finals for the first time?
Before the Spain game, I think pretty much everybody had written them off. And even from speaking to people who are in Russia about what the atmosphere has been like there, the general public in Russia didn't seem to believe that much. And since Sunday night, it appears that the whole country has gone completely mad and bought into it. There have been these remarkable street parties on Sunday night continuing into Monday, which was almost like they had won the World Cup. Could that excitement possibly tip them in the opposite direction, and they might go into the game against Croatia with this confidence that they perhaps didn't have in the previous games, possibly, have noticed that the central bank in Russia have announced that if they beat Croatia, they're going to release a new half-ruble coin to commemorate, which is shows how expectations, I guess, have completely exploded since the Spain game. In terms of the game, again, it's tough because on paper, Croatia have a far better squad. Croatia's midfield, you would imagine, have the ability to completely overrun Russia, but you could have made the same point about Spain as well. And you know, we've all read the stats about how much they run and their effort off of the ball. And being hosts, you can't underplay the impact and the influence playing in front of your home crowd can have. And I feel like they could cause another surprise.
As for Croatia, you mentioned their midfield and what a midfield that they have. But they don't have a prolific scorer, say, like Harry Kane. But they have been sharing the goals around. Six different Croats have been on the score sheet in Russia. Only Belgium have more goal scorers.
Yeah, and I think Mario Mandzukic is an excellent centre-forward in terms of holding the play up and bringing midfielders in. And Croatia's midfield is arguably the best midfield in the tournament. Obviously, people will compare it to France and Belgium as well. But these are players drawn from Real Madrid and Barcelona. Add Perisic to that list as well. And even if you look at, say, the likes of Kovacic, who hasn't been able to get a look into the team, he's been appearing off the bench. And there is that depth there. And even watching the Denmark game, when Modric sort of uncharacteristically struggled a little bit, afterwards there was an emphasis on the other players saying, you know, this is repaying you for all of the work you've done for us before. And it's a case of if one player doesn't step up on a particular occasion, they're going to have another midfielder next to him who's going to take charge and who's going to push forward. And in the case of the Denmark game, it was Ivan Rakitic. You would imagine that if Croatia are to progress, they will need the midfield to overrun Russia. It's more a case of if Russia sort of revert back to four-man defence, they'd obviously played five against Spain and just kind of completely sat back and seemed to have very little interest in attacking. If Russia revert back into the system they'd used throughout the group stage, I actually think that could give Croatia a better chance of progressing.
So can you pick a winner?
My head says Croatia, but I think because of this, the importance placed on momentum and atmosphere, I think Russia could possibly actually edge it.
Goodness, I'm torn. Me. And that then opens up the draw for England. It's very exciting. That is it for now. Many thanks to my guests today, Alan Smith, Henry Winter and Ollie Kay. Subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet for just £1 a week for your first 8 weeks. Search The Times subscription for more information. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or your preferred podcast supplier. And we'll be back on Saturday night. Will it be a happy night for England in Samara? We will speak to you then.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.